The Money Show. Small business.
Our small business focus this evening is brought to you by leaders in small and medium business. Telkom tomorrow starts today. Welcome to The Money Show, to our small business feature this evening, Warren Ingram. A couple of people wanting to talk about Bitcoin and different technologies, and my producers will follow up on all of those SMSs this evening. Can we have a chat on blockchain separate from Bitcoin? I think that's a good idea. Nish says, postgraduate accountants investing in Bitcoin. Help us all. Typical of a Ponzi scheme, even the rich and intelligent or duped. Warren is right. Human nature is going to drive this new way of thinking. Warren's in trouble. Excellent. I do like it when Warren gets in trouble. I'm a hairdresser. I've managed to invest 700,000 rand last year, and this year will exceed that amount. I use a particular asset manager. I've introduced my staff to this asset manager and their investment products. And I also went on 2 overseas trips last year. I lived well thanks to my hairdressing career. He wasn't having a go at hairdressers. He wasn't having a go at you. I'm sure he's very proud of the fact that you're doing so well as a hairdresser. You're doing very well as a hairdresser. I'm sure you can cut straight lines too. Just don't cut Pavlo's hair, because if you do it sort of per kilogram, you're going to be poor. But Warren is talking about the gossip and the discussions that happen in hairdressing salons. And if you're managing to ignore the hype, Ms. Hairdresser, then I'm delighted for you. I really am, because you're making sensible choices. Pablo Fatidis, are you a buyer of Bitcoins?
No, I'm not, Bruce.
Loser.
Yeah, apparently.
Now, listen, we need to talk about Stutterfords. Stutterfords would have commemorated its 160th birthday next year. But it's not an anniversary that it's going to see, because it's gone bust. It's the last department store we had. And I think it lost its way a long, long time ago. It's been stumbling and bumbling along and trying to reorganize itself and trying to survive. But finally, it's been put out of its misery.
It has. It has. And there was a wonderful write-up on it, actually, in the Financial Mail about what perceivably went wrong. And what amazed me and what interested me about it is that the entire article really centered around a shareholder spat. They're two very well-known families, very, very well-known in the commercial landscape of South Africa, old families in terms of their involvement in the retail sector. And purportedly, according to this article, there was a big spat between these two shareholders which delayed emergency actions. To Bruce, in my interpretation, from what I read and from what I understood, basically do more of the same. So perhaps the strategy led to the spat, and perhaps the spat just got activated by big egos. And whenever the shareholder spats, wow, it's a wonderful opportunity for entrepreneurs, because they always lead to the failure of the business. They always lead to the end of the business. And it's a great buy and strike opportunity.
It may be, but from a small business learning perspective, I mean, there are so many lessons just in that, in terms of you get into business with your school friends, for example, and you create a company and you're in a partnership or you have a shareholding agreement and things go wrong. Spats can destroy even great businesses. But, you know, Stutterfords had the added complication of being a business in a dying industry, and that is the old fashioned department store. You add the complexity then of shareholders who are not talking to each other, or if they are talking, they're talking loudly and in a shouty, unproductive kind of way. This happens, I'm sure, in small businesses all the time.
Well, it does. It's not immune to small business, and it's not a South African thing either. In fact, it's global. You know, we've spoken extensively about family businesses and why they don't successfully get through to the second and third and fourth generation. It's largely because, effectively, family members start to argue with each other. They carry a legacy of history. There's baggage involved. There are issues between families that you wouldn't normally have in a clean, clear relationship. You know, that's fairly objectified around the business instead. There's emotional stuff that gets involved. And whenever that takes place, we saw it. Which was that business, Bruce? I think it's an Indian Selco that's held by two brothers, and the two brothers
have Ambani. They're the Ambani brothers, I think. I can't remember the name of the company, but yeah, that was so messy.
Very, very messy. So it happens in every single business environment, and especially when things start going wrong. And in fact, when things start going right and the money starts to flow, it happens, it gets activated again. So, you know, if you're going to get married, if you're going to get in bed with the business partner, wow, you know, I often say to people, especially in the small business environment, Try before you buy. Date before you get married. There are many ways to do it, and we've spoken about it extensively.
Yeah, but there are people who are in business together for 20 years and suddenly have a fallout. It can go bad at any point. I mean, you can have all the documents you like in place. You can have all the experience you like in place. But when it goes bad and goes bad fast.
Yeah, it does. You know, especially when circumstances change. You know, two people start a business. Let's say both of them are single. They're both at work at 5:30 in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning. They're both leaving work 7:30, 8:30, 9:30 at night. One then lands up getting married. Next thing, there might be kids in the family. Next thing, you know, priorities start to shift. Agenda start to shift. Needs on the cash draw in the business start to change. And if that's not managed properly, it's going to lead to a shareholder spat. And we see a lot of that.
But this is, I suppose, different in that it is a retail icon. I mean, I just see today Sears in Canada, also department store business, American department store business, Sears. Sears in Canada has closed 59 stores. They're applying for bankruptcy protection. Macy's is having its lunch eaten by Amazon.com. And I don't know if you heard the stat earlier that only 8.5% of retail sales in the US are actually online retail sales, which blew my mind because I thought it would be higher. But there's this, the world of retail is changing. Stanifords, it would seem to me, didn't stand a chance. Did it have a chance? I mean, was the business model flawed? What to your mind was wrong?
I think so. You know, I think 150 years ago, when the business was 9 years old, it was a business model second to nothing. And what really determines whether the business model is good or not, and what determines it, is going to be, well, what problems are you solving for your customers? So back then, people wanted access to international brands. Back then, it was affordable. People could satiate their needs because the rand-dollar exchange, however that worked back then, 150 years ago, it was affordable. It really was affordable. The next thing is, it really mattered what you looked like in those years, significantly more so than it does today. People were always dressed to the nines. You know, I see some photographs of my immigrant grandfather going to these big family events out in park areas. Everyone was dressed in suits in a park. So evidently there was a very different sense of style, a very different sense of the right way to present yourself and the right sense of occasion. And then also back then, people were looking for social gathering places. And in fact, one of the innovations that Stutterford's designed and developed and implemented, and they were the first to do so, they were the first people to ever build a tea and sandwich shop in their stores. Huh. So people could go and shop there and at the same time have a good old natter. You know, nowadays, the tea and sandwich shop has been replaced by Wi-Fi and coffee, I guess, and,
but,
you know,
but they made shopping social. I mean, that's what made them stand out at the time.
Yes. Yes, they created an experience. They created a wonderful experience. But things have changed, and people have changed alongside with it. You know, one of the things that I'm most fascinated to look back 10 years from now and see what difference it made is I think we're living in a time and a space where people have far less cash. And as a result of that, the imagery of simply going out and shopping up a storm, as we sometimes see in the movies and there was that one soap opera, an American soap opera about these women who live in
Sex in the City.
Sex in the City.
Have you got the box sets? What do you mean? Stop playing good.
And they're constantly like shopping up a storm.
Stop being coy.
They're shopping up a storm. I'm amazed that you knew it off pat like that. That really is telling. But nonetheless, you had lots of images in all these stores where they would come back with, you know, packets and packets and packets of goods. The imagery and the experience of that is moving, it's leaving. And if you look at what shoppers want today, they really are looking for something that goes beyond the product. And people who think that offering credit in a world where people can't really access credit any longer is a value add, I think that that is very much 90s thinking, because in the 90s and the 80s that was valid. But nowadays, it needs to go beyond the simple experience of the product and the event of shopping in that store. And I don't think what Stutterford's innovated 150 years ago was left relevant today. And more importantly, there's a very, very fine lesson in this, because when we talk about being trapped by the images of our past, it's the way we've always done it. You know, there's no need to change. This is how it's always been. Well, actually, Stutterford's is South Africa's Kodak.
Hmm? Explain.
Well, what happened to Kodak?
It stopped clicking, yes.
Yeah, it stopped clicking. Their lunch was being eaten right in front of them. And they were defiant. smart, intelligent, educated, well, I'm guessing well-paid, capable executives defied the fact that their product would have no relevance in the future. They said, people will come back to it. People will come back to vinyl, I guess a lot of people also argued. And yet people didn't. And in effect, if you really look at it, the Stutterfoot story and its woes have been the litany of woes that they have faced, the dark holes of despair that they've been looking at for the last 10 years, Bruce. It's been well publicized and everyone's been aware of it. And for the last 10 years, certainly shoppers that I speak to have really been quite disparaging about the Stutterfoot's offering.
Yeah.
And yet nothing ostensibly changed. In the face of having their lunch eaten right from under them,
yeah,
nothing really changed in that business
model. You just got the sense that, you know, as it got more and more depressing to go into a Stutterfoot store, it just got, you know, the piles of clothes got bigger, the specials racks got bigger, the quality on the specials racks declined dramatically. There was wall-to-wall brands, a lack of service, a lack of love, a lack of joy. And it just wasn't a nice place to go anymore. I mean, at its basis level.
At its basis level. And when people look beyond the product and they look for the experience, you know, you've got to create experiences that are relevant to people today. I read something fascinating, and it's not confirmed yet, but apparently, the Amazon physical store has patented a piece of technology that will disable your ability to shop around on your phone to compare prices for products available in their store. Now, I can tell you, for free, people will not tolerate that. Yeah. They will not tolerate that because that's become the new way of shopping. Seldom do you see someone shopping today without the cell phone in their hand comparing prices directly in front of the store owner or the item that they're looking at.
What do we learn? What do we learn from us for our small businesses out of these tragic lessons? I mean, in the death of the death of the. Of the last of the old-fashioned stores of Stutterfoot's is a lesson for all of us, and we need to take some lessons from it. Pavlo Fotidis from Auric Business Accelerator. Here's my guest this evening as we talk about lessons from Stutterfoot's for your small business. Questions, comments on 011-883-0702-021-446-0567.
The Money Show. Small business.
So Tauncey on Twitter says he needs to learn lots more tonight. He loves the lessons that he gets with us on a Thursday night, Pavlo. So take us through some lessons, please, in retail. What can we learn for our small businesses from the big businesses that stop working?
Well, I think, you know, he has a brilliant, brilliant emerging retail business, Bruce, and I do some work within the UK. So in the UK, rental rates are very expensive, as they are over here in the big shopping centers and the main centers. And what they've realized is that people's priorities have changed. If you think about it, one of the scarcest commodities available to us and most precious commodity available to us is time. People want to be able to engage with products that they want, but not invest the time to do so. And I'll give you an example, and just bear with me on this. I remember as a kid, Bruce, my dad used to pace up and down the driveway, and he used to do so at 6:30 in the morning because he needed to get the newspaper delivered, and he needed the newspaper so he could complete his process every morning. Without that, his day would be ruined. So he'd walk up and down the driveway, and if it was 5 minutes late, he was furious and angry. His day was disturbed, and his peace was gotten rid of. And I look at it today, and I look at how the brand of the product or the organization controlled our behavior. And today it's become completely different, because when I need the news, I simply lift up my phone when I want to, how I want to, for as long as I want to, and to the extent that I want to. I now control the brand offering me the news, whereas in those days the brand controlled you. And I think that that is the fundamental shift and lesson, that if a retailer gets it right, they are really poised for a good experience, a good growth experience. This particular retailer in the UK only sells shirts. They make cotton shirts. They've got two types of fabric. They have two types of collars only. And then, Bruce, you go in for one single measurement once only. They've got about five stores within London itself. So you walk into this store, you're greeted by somebody who is dressed to the nines and has a tape measure around their neck. They take your measures once, and then you can choose from a selection of styles or patterns. There are 5 different collar sizes. There are 5 different arm length sizes. There are 3 different torso sizes. And you can never go wrong once you've got your measures right. They then give you a catalog after you've made your first purchase. And thereafter, Bruce, you never need to visit the store again. You're wearing the product. You know that they're there. If there's an issue, they will deal with it because you can go and get it dealt with instead of dealing with the call center. And you have a good experience with this particular product. Your next orders come whenever the catalogs come through to you. You say, 5 of these, please deliver it to my home. And 24 hours later, they're delivered to the home. So you know exactly what you're getting. And businesses that focus in on a niche, and even a deeper niche like this business has, I think lends itself to a very successful click-and-mortar model. In other words, where it starts to shift extensively into the online space, but it has the physical sites in order to keep your trust and confidence in play.
That's so interesting, because I mean, I just was talking earlier this week about a technology, well, a mechanism that Amazon has developed, and that's to its, you know, the customers it knows best, and its best customers, I suppose. It will let them take clothes, get clothes at home on APRO, what we used to be called APRO, for on approval. And so they'll deliver the clothes, you try them on, you put them in a box, and you send them back if you don't like them, and you get 7 days in which to do it. The world of retail is changing so fundamentally. So fundamentally, that if you're in an old school retail where you still rely on your customer coming back to you and they've got a world of choice at their fingertips, you're going to struggle.
I think you are. And then, you know, once someone has purchased something from you, creating a good experience for them allows you to maintain that relationship, because it is a relationship that people look for, and they're looking for the value-added service. And I spoke to you about a business here in South Africa that sells office furniture. And what it did, Bruce, it decided to focus right in on new business owners, early stage businesses, people who were working in the gig economy to a large degree, people who might be working from home, and they had Soho, it's called the small office, home office segment. So people who were starting at home, moving into a small office and hopefully growing from there. And that particular problem that was faced by that type of business owner was very particular. Because they were working from home, or because they were working from very small offices, they needed furniture that lifted the game, that made them look more sophisticated, that made them look better established. And yet at the same time, the furniture had to be very, very versatile. So what it led to were a series of furniture designs that are very unusual. You don't see them in the retail environment per se, but you see them if you are a Soho buyer of furniture. It becomes immediately apparent to your eye that you're dealing with a piece of furniture that's A, affordable, B, looks a lot more expensive than it really is, but C, is versatile. It can be a boardroom, you can set it up as a training environment, whatever the case might be. And what he went and did in order to create the reason for a relationship is that when you buy furniture from his store, Bruce, he offers you a free 6-monthly neaten up of the furniture. So he sends someone round to your home or to your small office. The person knows what furniture you bought, and literally they walk around with 2 or 3 different small pots of paint, and they touch up the furniture to make it look new and expensive once again. And in the meantime, they have a script, because when they visit you to do the free touch-up for you, they're asking you questions about the business with a view to see where the growth lies into the future.
Yeah.
So you know how to upsell and cross-sell to them.
But that's the point. Pavlo Fatidis, thank you so much indeed. Satterfords unfortunately didn't have Pavlo giving it advice. At least I hope it didn't. Pavlo Fatidis from Auric Business Accelerator.